I'm Dan Runcy, the host and founder of Trapital, and today I'm going to share another conversation with you from our Trapital Summit. If you've been listening to this show long enough, you know that one of the ongoing themes that has always interested me is that tension between permission and forgiveness. It's that constant push and pull that startup founders and investors try to push for when they want to see innovation, they want to see new developments happen in the space, but there's also understandable concerns from the rights holders and the incumbents in the space that want to make sure that they are being A, fairly compensated, and B, partnering with companies that they feel are going to be here for the long term. While this debate, frankly, is a bit more of a feature, not a bug, to how the ecosystem works, I still always felt like there could be a way to do it better. So one of the conversations that I wanted to have at the summit was talking to someone on the other side of the table. We've had conversations with a lot of the startup founders themselves, but I wanted to hear it from the rights holders themselves. And that's why we were grateful enough to have the Chief Digital Officer and Executive Vice President from Warner Music Group, Carlita Higginson, to join us. She's seen it on both sides of the table as an attorney that has represented rights holders in this space at YouTube and then now at Warner Music. So it was great to have her have a conversation with our friend of the show, Tatiana Sirisano, the senior consultant and analyst from Media Research. And they sat down and had an ongoing discussion about AI, music, what Warner Music Group's development looks like, how the label looks at that ongoing tension between permission and forgiveness, and if that can give us an indication on what to expect moving forward. Really, really enjoyed this conversation, and I hope you do too. Let's dive in.
Hello, podcast listeners. I have a question for you. What if you had a window into the digital startup world? What if you could ask the tech veterans what it feels like to create a world-class product? How to recover from critical mistakes? How to scale your solution to the masses? How do you get from an idea on the back of a napkin to a fully functioning product? What if you could hear the human stories about how they delivered technology? What if there was a show where you could hear those stories?
This is Code Story, a podcast bringing you interviews with tech visionaries.
Spent 6 months moonlighting.
There's nothing on the back end.
Who share what it takes to change an industry.
I don't exactly know what
to do next.
Took
many goes to get right.
Who built the teams that have their back.
A company is its people.
The teams help each other achieve
more. Most proud of our team.
Keeping scalability top of mind.
All that infrastructure was a pain.
Yes, we've been fighting it as we grow.
Total waste of time.
The stories you don't read in the headlines.
It's not an easy thing to achieve, mind
you. Took it off the shelf and dusted it off and tried it again.
To ride the ups and downs of the startup life.
You need to really want it.
It's not just about technology.
All this and more on Code Story. Make sure you subscribe to the Code Story podcast today on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or the podcasting app of your choice. And thanks again for listening.
And next to the stage for a conversation about AI and music, I'd like to introduce Carlita Higginson, the Executive Vice President and Chief Digital Officer for Warner Music Group, and Tati Sirisano from Media Research. Welcome.
Thank you for being here, Carlita. You know, I think it's never a dull moment in the music industry, but I feel like you joined at a particularly interesting time at Warner, or just for the music industry, as someone in your position, where everyone was still kind of reeling from this feeling of what is AI going to do to our business. So I'd really just be curious, first of all, to hear how's your first year been? And congratulations.
It's been a very interesting time. The first year has been, you know, frankly, I feel like an incredible one. There are a lot of things that we're thinking about as I think about sort of the job and that first year and what the priorities have been. First and foremost, it's, you know, my position is about driving revenue for the company. And so, you know, I think a lot and spend a lot of time on how do we think about our strategic approach for the next 10 years? And what are we thinking about in terms of optimizing revenue and our deal performance? And how do our models need to evolve in this world where streaming is evolving and monetization is evolving? And so optimizing performance of our existing deals, as well as, you know, thinking about new deals and new opportunities in the space, which include AI as, you know, sort of another place where there's been a lot of evolution. Certainly AI as another one of the priorities and something that's been, you know, I've spent a lot of time on during this first year, as we think about both the litigation aspect, the regulatory aspect, and the commercial opportunities that are within that AI space. Thinking about all of these things holistically, existing business, incremental business, evolving our business models has been what's kept me very busy in this first year.
And I know too that your role is a little bit different from how it would function at a different company, and also to tell us about how it's different from, you know, the same role at other companies.
So the way that my role is structured, which is unique, I don't know that there is any other music company that's sort of set up like this, certainly not the other majors, where I am going across our artist side of the business as well as our songwriter side of the business, as well as our global commercial partnerships. And so, you know, as we think about that, it means, you know, driving revenue both for artists as well as songwriters, and thinking about that holistically across recorded music and publishing. The way that we think about it from a Warner perspective is there's so much opportunity when you think about things holistically to figure out, you know, how do you want to leverage the sort of opportunities that we have as a whole in terms of our company? Having come over from YouTube, both Robert and I understand that, you know, you need both sets of rights. The service providers need both sets of rights to make the music content available. Publishing has an enormous reach with respect to where it, you know, all of the different content that it touches. The recorded music side has, you know, significant revenue opportunities. And so when we're facing and going into these negotiations, having the ability to think about it very holistically and really think about what are the opportunities to come together and approach the streaming services, it has been, you know, a great sort of place and opportunity for us to have, which is something that's unique, because in most places, the sort of publishing side of the business and the recorded music side of the business from a digital perspective in terms of the deals and the licensing framework tend to be almost like church and state, where they're not speaking to each other.
It makes it harder to make the sorts of deals happen that you're looking at in the, you know, emerging tech.
And there's just like a missed opportunity for, you know, really thinking about how do you bring your full leverage as a company to the table in those negotiations.
And it's such a unique vantage point for you and Robert and much of the newly installed leadership, having sort of been on the other side of the negotiating table between emerging platforms and rights holders. And a question that I love to ask people in this position is, what do you think that each side doesn't understand about the other?
I would say that, you know, one of the things that we are acutely aware of, having been on the other side for, you know, quite some time, is that the incentives that are in the deal matter, right? And the DSPs, the digital service providers, you know, particularly now, are really concerned about margin. You know, how do they improve their own margins? What does this look like? And so thinking about it in a way where we're thinking not only how do we grow our business, but how do we ensure that entity is growing their business, but not at the expense of music. If they are not incentivized to grow it in a way that's going to, you know, help the entire pie, then we're not really going to grow. And we're seeing changes in the industry, right? We're seeing changes in terms of content that isn't music content. How do we ensure that there is continued growth in music from a, you know, pricing perspective? What are the right ways that we structure the deal that incentivizes them to increase pricing and think about our models differently? How do we think about the royalty pool? And so having had that background from a YouTube perspective and understanding some of the pressures that they're having as one example, and you know, Meta is very different and Spotify is very different and TikTok can be very different, but there is certain commonality there. And so, you know, the importance of having that conversation, collaborating early and often, I think is something that sometimes has been, you know, missed in the industry.
And especially what you said about incentives, because I think one of the elements of this that's coming up with AI, but comes up every time that there's new technology, is this forgiveness versus permission debacle, where, you know, there's often new platforms that ask for forgiveness rather than permission when building new platforms that may encroach on rights. And obviously they should be asking permission, but we also know that the system isn't necessarily well set up for that. There's platforms that say, well, if I don't do this, someone else will do it and, you know, beat me to it, or we need the music to get the users, but we need the users to pay for the music. So it sort of feels like the whole system isn't really working. So I'm curious, like, how do you think we can foster more of that, more collaboration between these two sides instead of being at odds?
You know, the way that we approach it is very much we need to protect, right? We need to protect our Warner artists. We need to protect how they're, you know, what the structure looks like. But there is also a tremendous opportunity here. I go back and think about it from when I started my music career. I was a litigator. I worked at a law firm, Pryor Cashman, and then I was a partner at Jenner and Block. And at that time, when I came out and first started practicing, it was a time of significant digital disruption because it was the Napster era. It was a time where, you know, from you go and the record industry and how they were functioning and how they were operating, all of a sudden, all of this content was everywhere. It wasn't clear, you know, what the rights landscape should look like. You know, the copyright statute was something that had been developed a very long time ago. All of a sudden, content is everywhere. Nobody's paying for it. And that was a time when it was super important. And we, you know, I was, again, representing the rights holders during that time and said, it's super important to litigate so that we have the framework that's out there and we're setting up the right guardrails and establishing the right precedents for the businesses to figure out what needs to happen. And it was a while before, you know, the businesses started to catch up and the Spotify's came into existence and the YouTube's came into existence. When you see that, it then became, you know, as those businesses, as a result of some of the litigation that was happening, and as a result of some of the regulatory proceedings that were going down, these businesses started to say, all right, how do we partner with the industry and what should that partnership look like? I think the industry was then like, all right, how do we not put that genie back in the bottle because it's out and think about ways to monetize content and what are the particular opportunities that may be established from having this, you know, very significant disruption that has happened in the industry. And it was at that time that I went over to YouTube and started to, you know, work on the partnerships, right? When I went over there, there wasn't even a subscription business that was in play. And so starting to think through and work with the industry on what could this look like? What should this look like in terms of, you know, user-generated content and the ability for the music industry to monetize that content? How do we identify that content? What are the systems that we've built? And what do users, you know, want on that? And I think when I think about that journey and what has happened there and what's happening now, you know, from an AI perspective, and I know and understand, and YouTube was one of them. There was a lot of others where it was like, you know, we need to go out. We need this competitive advantage. The legal landscape may not be that clear in terms of what's required or what's not required and how is our behavior, you know, what's happening with our behavior. It goes back to this position of there's a need to embrace the technology because it's here and it's happening. And we can do that in various ways. The ability to partner early gives us the ability to think about and structure what are the ways that we can provide monetization opportunities, control to our artists from a name, image, likeness, and voice perspective, and attribution back to their content and their original content. All of those things happen. Oftentimes, it will happen fastest when you're dealing with the DSPs directly and you're starting, and there's a partnership where that's allowing that ability to define the rules of the road. Now, that said, that doesn't necessarily have to happen in isolation to litigation to protect your rights, where you have actors who are just not going to, you know, not going to take the steps necessary to get the licenses that, you know, we believe that they need. And so, you know, there's going to be that angle from a litigation perspective. There's going to be that angle from a regulatory perspective in terms of working with governments and policies to make sure that the right policies are defined. But then there's also the importance of getting in early and embracing it from a partnerships perspective, because that's really what is going to also help drive this.
And I feel like there is widespread agreement, at least at this point, that, like you said, you can't put the genie back in the bottle. I feel like I hear that phrase all the time from people in the music industry, but it's a good thing because it shows that, like, we're here now and the tone has kind of shifted with that, where it's more about, all right, this is where things are going. How can we, you know, protect our rights, but also innovate on that? So it does seem like the tone has definitely shifted.
Definitely. And I mean, innovation has always happened in the context of strong legislation and policy. I mean, those things, you know, the fact that there are those pieces of it certainly haven't been a bar to innovation. And I think that there are a lot of innovative ways and uses of the technology, both from a generative AI perspective, as well as, you know, for other business practices and other uses that, you know, can help foster that human creativity, that can really help drive that human artistry. But when you think about that, again, to do it within the context of providing artists and songwriters with control over name, image, likeness, and voice, all of those things are critical for that balance to work in the way that it should.
Here's a question I've been dying to ask you. because let's say that, you know, hypothetically, everything works out in the rights holder's favor, and there's now these AI training models that come to you and, you know, want to give you an agreeable sum to train on your catalog. Then you have to go to the next step of, okay, how can we make sure that our artists and songwriters are able to opt in to that, not just have to opt out? Like, how do we actually build a system to make this work? I'm sure that's something that you've had to start thinking about. Can you share any insight on that?
Definitely started to think about how all of this works, right? Again, I think having come from a place from a YouTube side where we didn't really know what the systems were going to look like and we didn't know how this was going to work, we think that there's like systems out there where you look at Content ID and you figure out how has that worked in terms of identification of content, monetization of content, and providing the ability to control what's in there by, you know, asserting certain rights. Those types of systems need to be evolved to apply into this type of framework. And it is a different framework. But, you know, providing a framework which allows for artists and songwriters to have control on anything that is implicating their name, image, likeness, and voice from an output perspective allows for, you know, us to set up a system where, again, if we work early on with digital service providers and others in, you know, other technology companies in this area, and to start to build out for technology that allows for that in a scalable way, is one of the things that we're thinking about and thinking through. I think from a training perspective, again, it's a fundamental core belief of ours that you need entity out there, engine out there, you need a license to train on our data. And so, you know, providing that license and providing the right ability to opt out or opt in certain instances, whether we're, you know, and it'll depend on whether you're talking about the input or the output use case. But anything that is from an output perspective implicating those name, image, likeness, and voice rights absolutely require the consent.
And we talked a little bit about the tone shifting of kind of more openness from the music industry now. Is there anything else? Because I'm curious, we've been through so many of these sort of hype cycles before, and I'm curious what you think is different this time around and what's kind of the same.
I think, is this a hype cycle? Maybe it's a hype cycle.
Yeah, I don't mean to like label it.
I look at
the hype around it.
They're certainly
peak right now.
Like it's at a peak, right? I mean, OpenAI, based on their last round of funding, it was something like $157 billion as their valuation. There is a lot of investment that's going into this space. I think one of the things that's different about this is we're approaching this early on, right? Early on in terms of thinking about negotiations and thinking about approach. I think when you think about AI generally, there are lots of different use cases and applications with respect to AI. And so the potential for disruption or the potential for opportunity comes and will impact a lot of different industries, right? Whether it's the medical industry, whether it's internal tools, it's not all generative from an AI perspective, right? So, you know, this is technology that is evolving that will be applicable in a whole host of ways that, you know, every day, you and I and so many others, you know, it will impact how we do business and what that business looks like. Now, whether that means or that will lead to a complete transformation of what the music industry looks like, there isn't technology that's happening that is going to replace artists, right? You know, that or songwriters, you know, that's certainly not something that we see coming or whatever. Now, does it change how they operate? Does it change how they are in the studio? Does it, you know, in the tools that are available to them? Does it change how fans interact with their content or different opportunities to have fans lean in and engage, bringing it back to that original content? Does it have the potential and the opportunity to have artists and songwriters reach different and new audiences and do that in a different way? I think absolutely.
No, and on that note, let's talk briefly about the YouTube Dream Track partnership, because that was one of the few examples we have of an authorized, you know, a generative AI product that is licensed, but with a major label. Based on the timing, it seems like that might have been in the works before you joined, but I'm sure, you know, you could speak to
both sides of it.
Both sides of it. Yeah. Yes.
I was at YouTube at the time that we were sort of developing the product and thinking about it and thinking about that particular experiment and the use case and starting to talk to rights holders about, you know, this opportunity. And then I was at Warner as we were closing out our deals to, you know, allow for the experimentation in that world. I think that it was a YouTube approached it in the right way in terms of, you know, like we had on the Warner side, we had four artists, I believe, you know, participate in that particular experiment. They consented, you know, to being a part of that and you know, to seeing how that technology was going to evolve and what types of, you know, potentials would come out of that. What I would say is that, and one of the learnings I would say, you know, that we see from that is that it was a very on-rails experiment. And so it was limited in terms of the number of creators who could access the tool. It was limited in terms of the ability for creators to create the content, you know, using the sort of synthesized voice of the artist. So there were a lot of limitations that, frankly, I think ultimately led to being making it a difficult place to really assess and evaluate whether this was a good opportunity, whether this is something that, you know, we should expand or they should do further or whatever. And so I think one of the learnings on something like that is we've got to strike the right balance on, you know, going out small, but then figuring out how do we allow for a bit more flexibility and you know, a larger scale operation to really be able to analyze, you know, the findings and whether or not this is the thing that artists, songwriters, or users really want. But I think that kudos to YouTube for coming and approaching it in the right way. And there are certainly other opportunities and experiments, you know, that they're contemplating. And I think that, you know, we were also with them involved in an artist incubator project where, you know, our artists go in and provide feedback and provide comments on, you know, what are the types of uses that they are looking for and what are the types of things that they think might help build their audience or, you know, drive different creative aspects of their work.
That's so interesting because it just speaks to what we're here to talk about, which is that balance as a major label of control versus innovation. And I realize I didn't explain, in case you haven't had a chance to check out Dream Track, this feature allowed fans to generate 30-second clips of songs sung in the voices of artists like Charlie XCX. And so it was just 30 seconds, so you have that element of control, but then how do you actually evaluate whether this was successful or not if fans don't have the full ability? So it is very, you know, that's a perfect example of that balance we're trying to talk about. And I think there are so many ways that AI can be used to help people be even further engaged with the music they already love. And there's other projects that Warner has been on, like the Edith Piaf animated film and the Randy Travis first song in a decade. I mean, can you speak to some of those? Because they're really amazing.
The Randy Travis is one of my favorite examples of it because, you know, it was using AI technology. So Randy Travis is an award-winning country musician who lost his voice after a debilitating stroke. And so, you know, he was without his voice. He used AI technology to be able to recreate his voice. He brought in the producers from previous albums to work with him on this and create new content. And if you see the video of him listening to it for the first time, you know, this ability to create new content in his own voice that was lost through this tragic, you know, sort of tragic event that happened in his life. It was incredible, right? It's incredible to see and to think about the power of AI to foster that further creativity. The Edith Piaf is another great example. It's, you know, we worked with her estate on creating content for a biopic that is happening. So, and again, in both of those instances, you're talking about control, right? Like, you know, the control of the artist to think about how they want their content to be used and what that looks like and what the ultimate output looks like. There are going to be a ton of additional, I mean, so many more than we could even sit here today and think about and articulate, but other uses like that, right? I mean, think about the ability for an artist, for example, to go tour in whatever country, and let's say they go to France and they go tour in France, and for their voice to come out and be singing, you know, a song in French, right? And tap into an audience that way. Or for a user who is wherever to tap in and allow for, you know, that artist to consume that artist's music in their native language. You know, those are some, you know, opportunities when you think about, you know, the ability for the technology to be used to enhance that creativity.
And I'm curious, are these projects coming from, you know, are the artists coming to you and saying, we want to do this? Is it Warner push? I guess it's a combination of...
It's a combination of where the technology is going and how it's evolving. And so, you know, those will be the platforms and the AI engines themselves that are coming to us and saying, here are some opportunities. They are a result of us talking to our artists and songwriters about, you know, what are the types of things that you're looking for. Because a lot of these are also abilities for, from a composition standpoint, from a songwriter perspective, the ability for their works to get used in a wholly different way, in a way that engages them with it allows them to sort of have exposure to a different audience. And so there, it's a sort of two-way street as that technology is evolving. Now there are other artists and songwriters who want nothing to do with it, right? And that's fine too, in striking that balance and ensuring that the ones who want nothing to do with it are protected and have the ability to opt out. And then the ones who do want to lean in and engage have the ability to do that and have controls over that and have monetization as we think about, you know, their livelihood there.
And we've sort of alluded to this, but I also just wanted to ask you directly, with all of the headlines and investment that we're seeing going into AI, are your expectations in line with the amount of money and hype around this? Or what is sort of realistic, I guess, to expect?
I think it's realistic to expect that things are going to continue to evolve. There is a significant amount of money that's being poured into, you know, into those technologies. Again, I don't know what that's going to ultimately mean for us and our industry. I know that we need to get in early and we want to be in early. But in terms of, you know, whether it's the right level of investment or not, it's hard to say until we start to see what are the particular use cases that are involved. How do we think about leveraging that, you know, to the best of our ability?
As it relates to AI or the other things that you're looking into, where do you kind of see Warner a year from now?
When I see the business and I see where we are from a music industry perspective, particularly from the seat that I am in, which is, you know, about driving revenue for the company, I think that there is a significant amount of continued potential from a streaming perspective. Streaming continues to drive a significant amount of revenue, but we are at the point where our models need to evolve and we need to rethink, you know, what that's looking like. And if we don't rethink what that's looking like, along with our partners, to structure things in a way that incentivizes further pricing optimization and growth, we would get left behind, and we don't want that. And you know, I think that there is lots of ways for this to be rebalanced in a way where, you know, we're continuing to grow and looking at the markets. When we think about sort of subscription, while we've gotten to a point where, you know, there's some subscriber saturation there in certain markets, you know, in certain mature markets, there's still a lot of opportunity for pricing in those markets, then there's still a lot of opportunity for further subscription growth outside of those mature markets. And so, you know, when I think about like predictions for the future, I think it's an evolution of our models from a music industry, you know, from a Warner specific perspective, the evolution of our royalty models, because I think we're going to continue to see all of this content, right? You know, we talk about all of this AI content, and one of the things that's unique about it is the fact that you can create so much content. You know, so much content can come in and flood the market. Again, unlicensed content, right? That could come in, and how do we think about that, and what should we be doing to protect against dilution as we think about the industry? And so I think that that evolution of what the economics and the structure looks like for the market over the next year is going to be, you know, the area where there's going to be the most change.
Well, thank you so much, Carlita. Thank you for your transparency and sharing your knowledge with us. This has been awesome.
Thank you,
Give it
Tati.
Up for Carlita Higginson.
If you enjoyed this episode, please share it with a friend. Send it to one or two people you think would really get value out of listening to this episode. And while you're at it, if you could rate and review the show, that would be great. Rate the podcast on Apple Podcasts, rate the podcast on Spotify, rate the podcast wherever you listen to podcasts. That helps make sure that the word gets out about Trapital and what we're building here. Thanks again for listening. Talk to you next time.